Chapter 7. Naming Day. 809.M30. Locos Olympia. There were few places in his kingdom that Damocos did not feel entitled to be. Perturabo's study was one of them. The youth had sought a place of isolation, creating his refuge in the attic spaces of the palace's western tower. Rafters and the undersides of pantiles were his ceiling. Cold winds blew in through the ventilation lights for most of the year, and on the few hot days the attic roasted. Perturabo had never been bothered by something as feeble as mere temperature, and he worked there day and night, whatever the weather. Damocos commanded his guards to remain at the tower's base and ascended the 15 flights of stairs alone, emerging into his foster son's lair. Thin beams of sunlight, admitted by gaps in the roofing, sliced through dusty air. Cages hung from crossbeams, doors open, birds resting inside. The boy had become a man, and still he hid in his attic like a bullied child. He sat at a draftsman's board, lit by a precious lumen light, his giant frame bent over his work in what unkind eyes would have seen as a parody of concentration. Perturabo would have heard Damocos coming as soon as he set foot on the stairs. His senses were as sharp as his mind, but he said nothing in greeting. He had heard, but he did not care. Damocos picked his way through the lattice of roof supports to the open space in the middle of the attic, marvelling at everything he saw. Perturabo had put in a floor of sturdy planks to cover the tower's exposed joists, had it installed shelves, a desk, and a massive bed sized to his superhuman frame. For such a meticulous being, his study was a wonder of disorganization. Scrolls of painstakingly inked designs were piled in untidy heaps, marred with wine rings and spatters of ink from more recent projects. Models of astounding intricacy sat on surfaces next to abandoned plates and the crocks of forgotten meals. Books on language shared space with long essays on architecture, maths, astronomy, history, and more, all of them written in Perturabo's delicate handwriting. Images of fantastical machines and cityscapes littered the floor. Damocos came into the open centre of the study, barely daring to breathe. Still, Perturabo said nothing, and Damocos's awe turned hard.
"You are hard at work on your follies again, my son?"
Perturabo grunted. "You know I don't like that word. Why do you taunt me with it?"
"Follies or son, Perturabo?" said Damocos.
There was bitter blood between them. Perturabo resented Damocos for reasons the tyrant barely understood. Damocos was angry that the youth rebuffed every affection he attempted to bestow upon him. Their conversation had become spiky with insinuated hurts and barely guarded criticism. As always, Damocos regretted his jibe. Perturabo would nurse the insult for weeks. He bore grudges that could outlive mountains. Damocos scooped a sheet of paper from the floor. It was an armoured fighting vehicle of some kind. The image looked impressive, if impractical, but Damocos suspected Perturabo could make it work. There was variety in all Perturabo did. The breadth of his knowledge was astounding and frightening.
"There are such treatises here," said Damocos, attempting an emollient tone. "The wise men of this city should be made aware of them."
"Why should they be interested?" said Perturabo gruffly.
"They have their ancient certainties. I would hate to upset them by presenting them with the new."
Perturabo bent closer to his scroll. His steel-nibbed pen scratched over the thick paper, never a mark wrong. The boy's massive shoulders hunched with tension as Damocos stood behind him, as if willing the tyrant to leave. But he said nothing and continued with his draftsmanship. Damocos watched as a great building took shape under his quick fingers.
"Is that a theatre? It is magnificent."
Perturabo sighed and took his pen from the paper.
"What do you want, my lord?" he said with a pained expression.
Damocos hid a frown. For all his might and intellect, Perturabo behaved with the same casual disdain for his elders that all young men had.
"I mean no harm. It is time you grew out of such petulance. Your naming day approaches. You will soon be of age, as I reckon it. It is a great day, a celebration of your coming to manhood. There will be feasting and sport of all kind.
Damocles tried to make it appealing. Every other Olympian youth looked forward to his naming day with great anticipation. Why could his foster son not be the same?
Have you chosen your name yet?
You know my name, said Perturabo.
He looked to a dusty fragmentary codex on one of the tables, a copy of a copy of a copy of an ancient work. None before Perturabo had been able to read its ancient language.
It is written in these records.
It has meaning.
Then do you care to tell me what it is?
You wouldn't understand, said Perturabo. His arrogance annoyed Damocles.
You must choose an Olympian name. It is custom.
Or what? The gods will be angry.
Your ceremony means nothing to me, said Perturabo.
My growth rate suggests to me that I was approximately 6 years old when you took me in. I came to true manhood before my 12th birthday. 16 is just a number, even more so for me than for any other boy. I have been mature for years.
Then act like it,
said Damocles, his patience wearing out quickly, as it always did when he spoke with Perturabo. He had sons of his own. He could not understand why his relationship with Perturabo should upset him so much, but he returned to pick at the wound over and over.
You are the most honoured youth in this city, and you behave poorly.
Do you expect gratitude? For the endless tests? For the snivelling intellectuals who come to denounce me as a fraud? For the members of your court who would see me dead?
These are unpleasantnesses that any highborn of Olympia must suffer. It is the price of power.
When will you see, my lord, that I am not like you?
Perturabo's anger was always sudden, his shout deafening. The avians in their cages cooed unhappily. Nevertheless, he held his pen away from his work so as not to spoil it. A single drop of ink fell to the floor.
When will you see that it does not matter what you are, but how you are regarded, said Damocles. You resent me when I have done nothing but show you kindness. I love you as a son.
Fathers do not use their sons, grumbled Perturabo.
Damocles laughed.
You'll tell me next that sons do not use their fathers. But they do, my boy, for food, for protection, for shelter, and love. Aye, love. Don't look at me like that. Day after day our family has reached out to embrace you, only for you to slap our hands away. Have you no care for any but yourself?
I care for all men, said Perturabo quietly.
Why do you think I designed these things for myself?
You call them follies, but they are to make the lives of people better. All through my life I have made this plain to you. You look at me and you see an asset for war, not a son, a weapon.
All sons must serve. This is a warlike place. The League plots against us. The oligarchs of Irex plot with them to overthrow our rule of their city. The tyrant of Messenae works with them. Power breeds jealousy.
That is a lesson I have learnt all too well in your court.
What do you want of me?
Said Damocles, at a loss for what to say to his brooding foster son.
Do you want me to rage at you? You behave as if you wish me to hate you. I will not. I cannot. Can you not see that I delight in your success? I am as proud of you as I am of any of my children.
Your delight is at the power I bring to your arm.
Your pride in me is a reflection only of your pride in yourself.
Perturabo's voice rose, his hands clenched. They were enormous. The spatulate thick hands of a labourer magnified tenfold.
Every venture I have undertaken, you have sought to divert towards war, always towards war. My interest in language, you harness to breaking the codes of your enemies. My architecture is fit only for the construction of towers and walls. My mathematics, given over to the fashioning of tools of death. All while you trumpet my ability as some kind of understandable precociousness. As if I were a normal child, the prodigy of Locos.
He stood looming over his adopted father, enormous muscles bunched under his robes.
Whatever I do, be it this.
He snatched up a model of a graceful bridge and crushed it in his fist.
Or this.
He crumpled a plan for a public bathhouse.
Or this.
this!
He swept a host of rolled scrolls onto the floor. They bounced across the rugs. Fastenings broke and some unrolled. New manners of transport, safer water systems, medical instruments, all were carried before his rage. Damikos backed off. Perturabo's pupils, so dreadfully black, grew to swallow the ice of his irises. Perturabo let out a cruel laugh, thick with self-loathing.
Your lack of courage shames you. You have no faith in me, or you would not be afraid. I pledged you loyalty until my death. You'll have nothing more from me. Be content with that. I shall be your weapon, as you so desire. There is nothing more to give.
You cannot live your life alone, my son, said Damikos sadly.
One day you will see that.
Why will I? Said Perturabo.
There is no one else like me anywhere. I am alone.
I am not your son. I have no need for love. There is no love in logic, only cause and effect.
You require me, so you lie.
I do not lie. I have used you, yes, said Damikos. But that is the way of things. It does not lessen my affection.
Perturabo's anger abated as quickly as it had come. He looked regretfully at his scattered possessions.
You lie to everyone else. Why should I believe you? I have my own father, and one day he shall come for me.
How could you know?
Perturabo gave him a look of blistering superiority, and a part of Damikos sorrowed. Perturabo looked upwards to the roof. There was something his adopted son could see there in the sky. He never spoke of it openly. When he had been discovered, Miltiades mentioned that Perturabo had asked if he could see a star maelstrom. He had never mentioned it again. A few times, Damikos had attempted to draw the truth out of him. Perturabo was as masterly at evasion as he was at everything else.
I just know, said Perturabo.
So you have faith?
It is not faith. I believe in nothing I cannot deduce, Perturabo said. I am not a normal man. Someone put considerable effort into making me, designing me. It is illogical to suggest that they would abandon something that required so much time and expertise. Whoever created me will be looking for me.
The hulking youth turned his attention back to his drawing. He slowed, paused, then tore the sheet away. Pins popped from the woods and rattled onto the attic floor. Methodically, he ripped the design up.
Flawed, he muttered.
Nobody can do such things, said Damikos.
Some can, said Perturabo.
The black judges have such a skill, perhaps. You believe you were made by those monsters? Said Damikos in shock.
Perturabo ignored the question. He patiently removed the scraps of paper from the board and tacked another sheet in place. Doggedly, he began again. Damikos watched Perturabo a while longer. Perturabo did have faith. Faith in his reasoning and his sciences and his art. Men need faith when they are afraid. Perturabo was no exception. The peerless command of logic he possessed was a blind, a false wall in the fortification of his indomitable mind. For no matter what Perturabo said, he was afraid. Why else would he be so intransigent? Perturabo was frightened of the star maelstrom. Damikos had a sudden misgiving. People saw Perturabo's physicality and prodigious intellect as his chief strengths. To Damikos, this was not so. It was his foster son's absolute pragmatism that made him such a powerful asset to his court, and the strange youth's faith in reason was the foundation of that. It did not stem from ruthlessness or from a lack of emotion, but from a sincere wish for order at any cost. That Perturabo feared something no one else could see was a crack in the stone of that absolute conviction. It was the flaw in the bedrock that could bring low the mightiest fortress. Damikos was a man of his time and place, self-serving, cunning, sometimes needfully cruel. But he was wise, and he feared the day that his foster son's faith would fail.
as it surely must. The Hall of Plymades was full to capacity with Olympians. They ate like the gods, reclining on low couches arranged according to rank, surrounded by delicacies of the highest cost. Music played while dancers wove in and out of the circles of couches, expertly trailing their long ribbons over the heads and the dishes of the feasters. The revellers clapped in delight and howled with laughter as broad strands of silk came fleetingly in the way of hands reaching for choice morsels, or mockingly caressed the more libidinous among them. Such lightness was rare in a society vested in the working of stone. The weight of fortress walls pressed in and down on everything, moulding the people they surrounded subtly, yet totally.
"Perturabo does not approve, father," said Democus's son, Heracon.
He nodded at his giant foster brother. The tyrant's family were raised up on a low dais, arrayed around the most laden table of all at the centre of the room, where all could see their wealth. Only waged freemen served them, not helots, and they drank from staggeringly expensive cups of copper, gold and platinum.
"I can see Perturabo does not approve, but unlike you, my son, I am not stupid enough to say so too loudly."
Damakos smiled and waved at Aenon Thulk, one of the 12 Logi of Locus. He spoke to his son lightly, as if sharing a jest, but his words, hidden just below the level of Avlos flutes and stringed Fromix, carried serious intent.
"There can be no division between us. Estrangement provides ingress for the assassin's knife. You are the eldest, Heracon, but you lack the guile for tyranthood. Guard your tongue better."
Heracon attempted to return his father's smile in order to maintain the pretense, but he cringed like a cur stung by a moor asp. Damakos exchanged pleasantries with Mondak Eumenos, the third Logi. He was of Irix, regarded as an outsider and rude in manners by his fellows, and for good reason. Damakos had put him close to his own position as a reminder to the other 11 Logi that their status depended very much on his will. Such things were beyond Heracon. Andos was better, but too kindly for kingship. Of his three natural-born children, only his daughter, Caliphany, had the nous for leadership. That was a shame. There were female tyrants on Olympia, but not in Locos. Never there. Heracon was right about Perturabo. Damakos watched him from the corner of his eye over the heaped food between them. Other boys made merry at their naming ceremony. They were forgiven bawdy behaviour. Indeed, it was expected, the occasion being a dividing line between the first and second stages of life, where the appetites of a man might be expressed through the follies of youth. Displays of poetic extemporization, drunkenness, lechery, feats of strength, and more were encouraged. Perturabo did none of that. He lay on his specially made feasting couch, scowling at the frivolity. He wore the expression of an accountant forced to attend the grand celebrations of his bankrupt king. He would be toting up the cost of every fruit and each joint of meat. He had stopped telling Damakos how many of the poor their feasts would feed, but he had not stopped thinking about it. The tyrant had hoped he would throw off his sullen nature just for one day, but he had known it for a vain hope.
"Time to get this over with," thought Damakos.
Perturabo was never going to fit the image of an Olympian man, and Damakos was beginning to see there was no point trying to make him. Nevertheless, he dreaded the little speech he would have to make now more than many others he had delivered. The tyrant of Locos stood. The music came to a flourished halt, and a fanfare of iron carynxes blared hard notes from mouths cast as angry divine faces.
"Today is my foster son's name day," said Damakos.
There was a broad cheer from the assembled nobility. Though not well liked, Perturabo was well respected, and wine and fear can both make a man shout more loudly.
"He has dwelt among us here at Locos now for 10 years, and although his birth date remains as mysterious to us as so much about him, we reckon it is now his 16th birthday, on this, the anniversary of his coming to us. He is, evidently, a man after all."
There was another cheer. No one could doubt that was the truth. Perturabo was a giant, taller or more heavily built than any man in Olympian history, with the face and beard of a 30-year-old general.
Now he has come of age, our gift from the gods. It is time for him to choose the name he will be known as forevermore.
Perturabo had been staring unblinkingly at him all the way through this speech. Damocles turned and looked straight into that cold stare of his, mustering what semblance of warmth he could in the iciness of Perturabo's regard.
Foster son, before you choose, there is another tiding I must bring to your attention. I have decided that you shall be adopted into my family formally. This is a sign not only of your great promise as a man.
Damocles wetted his lips. His voice became strong, edged with iron. He would make this stubborn boy see.
But also of the great love we hold for you in our hearts. My son, I salute you.
Damocles raised his goblet and drank. The nobles followed suit with scattered cries of support. Perturabo raised his goblet a fraction, his eyes never once leaving Damocles' own, and took a small sip. Caliphany smiled affectionately at her new brother and touched his arm. Heracon scowled. Andos clapped politely.
Now stand, said Damocles. It is time for you to choose your name.
The crowd began a chant.
Name! 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 Name!
They banged their drinking vessels of priceless conductive metals on the dining tables and stamped their sandals upon the marble floor. Through the thunders of their approbation, five priestesses wafted their way through the crowd. They were covered from head to foot in sheer black silks that billowed and clung to their nakedness beneath. Gold masks of Hephany, horned goddess of life, covered their faces. The only part of them that was visible was their eyes. Their leader carried a silver knife and a golden bowl. They stood before Perturabo, whose head, even while he reclined upon his massive couch, came to their shoulders.
Stand,
commanded the priestess. Silence fell across the hall. Very deliberately, Perturabo put his goblet aside and rose to his full, imposing height. The priestesses, agents of the divine though they were, appeared as children before him. Two priestesses lifted Perturabo's hand over the lead priestess's golden bowl. She pressed the knife to his palm and looked up into his thick-set face.
You come of age. Choose your name, and by blood it will be sealed.
Perturabo stared at her.
What name will you choose, my son?
Prompted Damocles.
To be remembered in the hallowed annals of our family?
Perturabo looked across the hall.
A thing has a nature unto itself. That nature is immutable. It might be changed temporarily by heat, or alloyed with another element to create a third. It might be wrought and changed in form by the application of force or of chemicals. Stone can be cut and made into walls. Silver and gold might be smelted and combined into electrum. Iron can be forged into weapons or ploughs. Water might be heated to steam. But the stone remains stone. The silver and gold can be separated by acid. Iron can be remade, or might rust into powder, where it nevertheless remains iron. Steam condenses back into water. Nothing changes its nature. You expect me to take a name to honour one of your ancient heroes? Idrakos, perhaps, or Rakator. I cannot assume these names or any other, for I am not them. I am Perturabo. I was made to be Perturabo. As a boy, I was Perturabo, and as a man, I shall remain him. My name is me, and I am my name.
He looked down at the woman. The knife was shaking in her hand.
Cut me, he commanded her, and release Perturabo's blood, for my name is Perturabo.
Heracon was smiling unpleasantly. Damocles saw Caliphany mouth,
Oh, Perturabo,
at him. Unsure, the priestess looked to Damocos for guidance. Perturabo was no Olympian name. A tense quiet fell across the hall. The tyrant concealed his disappointment behind a light smile.
He is within his rights to choose his own name. My son is not like the rest of us. If he is Perturabo, then he is Perturabo. To my son, Perturabo, he exclaimed.
The response was muted.
Perturabo,
the noble said back. The priestess made a swift slash across Perturabo's hand. Blood welled from the wound, which then quickly closed. A single spot fell into the cup.
Then I name you Perturabo,
the priestess said. She and her acolytes withdrew. Perturabo glowered still, but Damocos thought he saw, in the instant before the giant sat, the slightest smile upon his lips. A flash of a thing, gone before it arrived, like a fish rising in the water.